You see, our kids are not rejecting our faith because we have bad doctrine. They're not rejecting our faith because we don't have good youth ministry. They're rejecting primarily because they see their parents mouth it, but they're not living it.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Kurt Bruner, your host. In May of 2010, Steve Stroop and I had a chance to release a book titled It Starts at Home. And part of what we emphasize in that book is the importance of leaders and how actually the home is the proving ground of leadership in any other arena. Well, Steve Stroop was asked to present to a group of senior pastors on this theme. For those who don't know, Steve Stroop is the lead pastor of Lake Point Church in Rockwall, Texas. We've been partnering now for a number of years in trying to create a culture of intentional families at Lake Point and then helping other churches do likewise. So I hope you find this presentation as challenging and encouraging as I know the leaders who attended the event did, as we stretch ourselves and as we become more committed than ever to the priority of the home.
Now, I talk about leadership wherever I go. Leadership is a passion in my life. It's one of the gifts that God has given me, and I'd like to begin today, as we talk about leading in the home, I'd like to define leadership. Now, you may want to write this down, so you just grab you a pen. It's a little complex, but I think it's very profound. Let me just give you my definition of leadership. A leader, here it is, a leader is someone who leads. That's pretty profound, isn't it? Think about it, guys. A leader is one who leads. That means he gets out in front, or she gets out in front of everybody else, and that means that they're encountering the problem and they're solving those problems before most of the people that are their followers even know there's a problem. A leader not only gets out and anticipates problems and solves them before anybody else, but a leader leads in that they're headed in the direction that they want the followers to go, and by going there first themselves, they are leading. What does a leader do in the family? How does one lead in the family? Well, first of all, a leader clarifies purpose and casts vision. A leader clarifies purpose and casts vision. In Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, in verse 4, it says this, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God. The Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might." Now, most of you know that that's given to Moses to give to the children of Israel right before they went into the land of Canaan. He was to give it to the tribes. What are tribes? Tribes are families, that's right. And so here they've been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, and they're about to enter the land of Canaan. What's the one thing that he says to the families before they go into the land that's flowing with milk and honey? He's saying, guys, listen, you're going to get distracted when you get into the promised land. When they were in the wilderness, every day they would see a cloud of smoke, and it would remind them of God's leadership and God's guidance. At night, when they laid their head on the pillow, they'd look out their tent, and they'd see a pillar of fire, and it reminded them that God was watching over them and protecting them from their enemies. And when they got up the next morning, there was manna on the ground, and they were reminded that God was providing for them, and they depended upon God. But now they were going to go into a place where there was plenty, and there wouldn't be manna on the ground anymore. They were going into a place where was different than the wilderness. When they were in the wilderness, they didn't have cell phones. They didn't have television. They didn't have Xbox 360. But now they were going into the promised land, and they would be building homes. They would be plowing fields. It was going to be easy for them to get distracted about the purpose of the family. Listen, my friends, our people are busy, aren't they? And they're distracted by so many things in media and all the activities that are going on in sports teams and all around them. There's so much to distract them that they have forgotten the purpose of the family. And it's to love God 3D. That's right. With all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And we have to remind the family the purpose of the family. And we have to be reminded ourselves, don't we? It reminds me of a fellow who was going to New York City, and he was standing there in the airport, and a lady overheard the fact that he was going to New York City, and she came up to him. She said, "Sir, I understand you're going to New York City." He said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I am." And she said, "Well, my son ran away from home about 2 years ago and ran off to New York City, and I wonder if you would look up my son when you're there." He said, well, ma'am, New York City is a fairly large place. I doubt very seriously if I'm going to be able to see your son. And she started crying uncontrollably right there in the middle of the airport. Well, he was embarrassed, and so he said, fine, lady, I'll look for your son when I'm in New York City. She said, well, you don't even know his name. She said, what's his name? And she said, John Dunn. And he said, fine. So would you write that down? And so he said, sure, and he wrote down the name John Dunn. Didn't think much about it, put it in his pocket, until he landed in New York City and was a taxi cab, and he was driving down one of the streets, and he noticed a large building that said Dunn and Bradstreet. He looked at the name John Dunn. He thought, my goodness, that young man's done real well for himself in 2 years. And so he asked the cab driver to stop by the building. He walked into the foyer, and there was a lady sitting at a reception desk. He said, ma'am, do you have a John here? She said, of course we do. Second door on the right. He went down. There was a guy standing at the sink washing his hands. He said, are you done? And he said, yes, I am. He said, call your mother. Now, what we have there is we have someone who's confused about their purpose. And I think a lot of times as we go along, there's this going on over here and this is going on over here. And we get distracted and we forget the purpose of a family. The purpose of the family is not to decorate your home. The purpose of the family is not to go on the next vacation. The purpose of your home is not to make sure your kid has tutors and your children have sports coaches and that they have music lessons so that they can be experientially rich and relationally poor. We get distracted, and none of those things are wrong, but none of those things are central. What is central is that we love God with all of our heart and with all our soul and with all of our might. And if you're the leader of the family, you have to remember that purpose and clarify that purpose and cast that vision. It's interesting here that here in Deuteronomy that God is talking about the need for his people, his families, to love him. There's already been a command that was given before this that we're not to have any other gods before him. There's a command for us to love one another, but this is the first time in the Bible where it talks about us loving God. Listen to me very carefully. It's easy as a leader of a family to teach our children the laws. To say, young people, I want you to grow up and not cheat, and I want you to grow up and not commit adultery, and I want you to grow up and not bear false witness. But my friends, if we teach our children the law and we do not introduce them to the lawgiver, what we've created is a religion. And that's the problem, friends. We talk a lot about the law. We talk a lot about the rules to our children. But we don't talk enough about loving God. And we've got to cast that vision that if our family doesn't do anything else, we're going to, as a family, love God. And we're going to see to it that all of our boys and all of our girls and all of our students love God. Father's Day will be coming up not too many months from now, and some of your family members are going to have a real problem because they're going to try to figure out what to give some of you for Father's Day. I mean, Father, in our society anyway, carries the checkbook most of the time, and he pretty much has gotten anything that he wants. What do you give a dad that has everything? What do you give a God who doesn't need anything from us? You give him your trust. We use the word faith a lot. Well, trust is a synonym for that. It means to trust God. And to trust God is to look at his laws and to obey them, not because they're laws, but because of the one who has given the law. When I was growing up, my mom and dad, when they would tell me to do things, I would always ask the question, why? And what did they say to me? Because I told you so. And I said to myself when I was a teenager, I said, you know, when I grow up and I have kids, I'm going to be a better parent than my parents. And when my kids ask why, I'm going to actually tell them why. And so I remember my very first child came along as Rachel, my strong-willed child. I don't know where she got that, but as she grew up, she began to push back and she said, Dad, why? And I sat down with her and I drew out a chart and I showed her the rationale for all the rules we had and the alignment of it and all that. And when I got finished, she looked at me and she said, Dad, thou art so wise. I can see clearly how the alignment of the rationale that you have, and I will willfully follow and obey you all of my life. That didn't happen. And so I started saying, because I told you so, because I said so. And what I was really saying to Rachel is I was saying, darling, you're going to have to trust your dad because he's your dad. You're going to have to understand that your dad has gone through some things that you haven't gone through. And he knows some things because he knows the Word of God that you don't know yet. But most of all, Rachel, you need to know that even when I'm too strict, you need to know that the rules that I have set down, I've set that down to protect you and to provide for you. More than anything else, Rachel, you have to believe that your daddy loves you. And you follow my rules because you trust my heart. And friends, that's what we give God. The purpose of the family is to trust God, to love him by trusting him. What did he say? You read the scriptures just a moment ago. If you love me, keep my commandments. That's how we love God. And the purpose of the family is to love God. A leader clarifies that purpose, and a leader casts a vision of what a family looks like that loves God and that trusts God. Second thing that a leader does is a leader also implements an effective strategy. It's one thing to stand up in your church as a leader and talk about what we ought to do and where we ought to go, but friends, it doesn't matter if we don't do it. And we got to have an effective strategy that's implemented. Look there in Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, and verse 7, it says this, "And you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up." Now, what is the strategy here? The strategy for shaping a home to be a God-loving, God-trusting, God-glorifying home is to do it when you sit down, and usually for us that means at a meal, although most families don't sit together at a meal anymore. And if they do, the television's on. It says that we're to do it as we walk in the way. Not many folks walk today, but that's drive time for most of us. It says that we're to do it when we lie down at night, when we tuck our kids into bed. And we're to do it when we rise up. Do you know what God's strategy is here? God's strategy is for us to clarify the purpose of the family and to cast the vision, not by holding any new meetings, not by scheduling stuff at the church, but when we're doing life with our family. Do you see the synergy of this? To all our busy families, we're not needing to add another event here. We're asking them to begin to disciple their children while they do life with their children, but that means they have to do life with their children. James Dobson, one of the things that I blessed my life as a young parent, was when he told the story about the fact that when your children are young and every time you give your children attention and you use the opportunities that are naturally in their lives, you get an invisible token. Child crawls up in your lap and says, "Read to me that story for the 100th time." And you read it again. And they say, "Read it again, Daddy," and you read it again. You get an invisible token. And when that child draws a picture and they come and they show it to you and you say, "Tell me about it." That's, by the way, what you say. You don't say, "What is that?" You say, "Tell me about it." And they tell you about it and you actually listen and you turn off the television and you give them your undivided attention, you get an invisible token. And on and on and on. When you go on a walk and you collect leaves and you begin to put those leaves in a little book and talk about how creative God is and about how no single leaf is like another one and how he's created us in the same way and that God knows everything about us. He even knows the number of hairs on our head. And we say, "I wonder how many hairs there are on our heads." You get an invisible token. And then your child turns 12. And the day they turn 12, you stop collecting tokens and you start spending them. And the secret to parenting is to collect enough tokens before their 12th birthday that you can make it through their 21st birthday. Now, that's what the Bible's talking about. That's God's strategy, is that we spend time with our family and we take advantage of the synergy of those opportunities. Notice also the rhythm. Why is it you can't remember your driver's license number, but you can remember the first rock and roll song that you ever heard? Because of rhythm. And there's a rhythm to this. The children of Israel, they would celebrate the Shabbat or the Sabbath once a week. There was a rhythm to it. And then they had their festivals and they had their feast. But you know, we've got the same thing. We've got those same reoccurring things in our life. When we sit down and when we walk in the way, when we lie down and when we rise up in the morning, we also have the Sabbath and we communicate how we observe that with our family. And we don't have the feast and the festivals that the Jews had, but friends, we've got Thanksgiving and Christmas and Mother's Day and Father's Day. And all of those can be taken as an opportunity to teach spiritual truths. We got Father's Day coming up, and I pray that every single dad and every single one of your church, after they get that really ugly tie from their family, will pause. And they will say, you know what, before I thank you fully for the way you've honored me today, let's honor the perfect father. I make mistakes, and I'm trying to be the best dad that I can, and I thank you guys for being patient with me. But let's all just go around and just share one thing about our perfect father that we appreciate. And when we finish, can we all kneel here in the living room and just thank God for being that kind of father? Why in the world would you not do that every Father's Day? There are people who celebrate Thanksgiving and they celebrate football and they celebrate turkey legs, but they don't point to the giver of all good gifts with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. Why wouldn't we do that on a regular basis? Parents are in homes where they don't even talk about God. They load up their kids. Some of them load up their kids and go to your church every week, and they dump their kid in the youth area, and they dump their kid in the children area. But they don't even mention God on the way home from church, and he's not mentioned all week long. 10% of the children who attend an evangelical church, only 10% of those children experience any discussion about or any activity about God outside of the church with their parents other than a mealtime prayer. And we're wondering why we're losing half of our own children. It starts at home. Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, verse 6 says this, "And these words which I'm commanding you today shall be first on your heart." You see, our kids are not rejecting our faith because we have bad doctrine. They're not rejecting our faith because we don't have good youth ministry. They're rejecting primarily because they see their parents mouth it, but they're not living it. This thing's not for real. Let me tell you something. If you want to see more generosity in your home, be generous. If you want to see more forgiveness in your home, be more forgiving. If you want more romance in your home, be more romantic. Whatever it is that you're wanting to see in your kids, whatever it is that you're wanting to see in your home, it has to begin in us. To lead your home is to cast a vision for it. It's to implement the strategy of doing life together and being responsible for your own children's spiritual formation. But most of all, it's to live the vision.